Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for episode 5 of Survivor David vs. Goliath. My name is Mike Bloom, here to bring you Come Rain or Shine, another podcast talking about this really great season of Survivor. Of course, I am not alone. I am joined by my sis cha-cha, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you doing?
I'm great, but Mike, you're the one who is doing amazing because you have announced on social media you are going to have an RHAP baby.
How long did it take you to like think about? Is that your wand off for the week?
That's actually my wand off. It's the RHAP B&B theme song, but all geared to your baby. Afraid.
For those of you that are not attuned to social media, at least in the past 24 hours, I have made the official announcement that my lovely wife, Angela, is expecting. We have a child due mid-May to sort of give some blanket answers. We do not know the gender yet. We should be finding that out in a couple weeks. It's very exciting. It's very nerve-wracking. And I want to thank you all, my co-host included, for the vast amounts of support over the past 24 hours. It has made an exciting event even more exciting. I feel positively blown over like I hit a big tornadic wind.
Hopefully you won't get evacuated when the baby comes. You'll be allowed to stay.
I might. I'm a little squeamish. So like we're Angela and I have legitimately had this conversation about like how will I personally handle the delivery room. I have glimpses of like that episode of Full House when the twins are born and Jesse had to get his appendix taken out and he's sort of lying in a gurney besides Becky while the birth is happening. Like I feel like that might happen to me, but spurred on by some sort of fainting spell that makes me lie completely horizontal as I watch my child get brought into the world.
Yeah, and the father, completely useless, laying on the floor.
Yeah, Jeff Probst will be my doula, saying like, come on, what are you doing?
Yeah, I definitely think everybody would want Jeff Probst narrating. It would be the same as, what was he saying about Davey this episode?
Yeah, no Davey, no idea what Davey's doing. Like, he interrupted himself. It was a nice little, in a season that's full of these nice little ticks of editing, that's another really fun one.
Yeah, that would be for you. It would be like, no idea what Mike's doing. Completely useless.
Well, that could be applied to many, many facets of my life. So maybe I just need Jeff Probst as a life coach to do that. And for those of you that might be paying a bit attention. So, yes, we were originally supposed to have the great Amon Adwin on this week. Due to some scheduling difficulties, we weren't able to make it work at the last minute. So it's going to be just Liana and I battering down the hatches to talk through this pretty crazy episode of David vs. Goliath, which is feeling redundant at this point. And we'll see now that we are in the post-Natalie era of David vs. Goliath officially, whether or not that insanity is going to keep up. But Liana, what were your thoughts about the closing, the final spurts of Napalm Natalie we got this season?
Oh my gosh. It was sort of one of those things where I was just waiting for the other shoe to drop when it came to Natalie being voted out. And it felt like every single time she was escaping the clutches of tribal council. But finally, it was so sad to see her go out, but in such an epic fashion. And I'm sure we'll get into this with all of the sort of post press and behind the scenes stuff of how Natalie left the game. But to have it be Jacket Gate just feels so fitting for Natalie's exit.
Yeah, I can't think of a like more negligible reason. Not it wasn't the reason why she went home, but like a more negligible focus on such a random object in terms of, you know, post immunity challenge, pre tribal council gameplay. Can you think of anything that's like as rudimentary as, oh, all this drama started because one person wanted another person's jacket and Natalie decided to serve as the mouthpiece and the messenger got killed as a result?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking of Abby Maria and her bracelet is the first thing that pops into my head. But what happened with Natalie was just so complex once I started thinking about it. So, okay, so this is what I've put together from hearing Natalie's exit interview and all of her exit press, along with Angelina's comments on social media. Okay, here's what I think happened. So I think that Angelina was definitely going to vote for Natalie, because there's no way that Mike White was going to do anything on his own. Like, from what Natalie said, Mike White never would have led anything. So when it was, you know, 2-3, I was like, whoa, Mike stepped out of his box and actually did something independent. No, of course not. I think Angelina, we saw her lead the charge with Jeremy. She totally was on board to vote out or to get Natalie out of the game, but definitely played it. So I'll be so sympathetic that Natalie got voted out. She'll give me her jacket, and just such a crazy convoluted plan that was so complicated from so many different angles. That's what ended up resulting in Natalie going home. And I just love every little bit of it.
Yeah. And of course, like the reason why it's so much fun as well is because of that final beat of it. If she had given away the jacket, we would have said, you know, yes, Angelina, viperous queen, you know, she was able to get a jacket and, you know, milk Natalie's emotions and trick her. But Natalie, true to what Jeff Probst sort of thrust upon her at Tribal Council, got the last word, or lack thereof, when she did not heed Angelina's call. And she understandably, or at least according to our exit press, she correctly deduced that Angelina, even though she voted with her, was, you know, in on the plan to get rid of her. She saw through her JT voting with coach-esque lies to get on her good side, and says, you know what, this jacket seems nice, I'm going to walk out with it. And, you know, this coupled with Natalia's dressing down of Alec last week, it's just two fantastic back-to-back and really divergent reactions in how, you know, when someone is going to get voted out and one person votes with them. In Natalia's case, it's her like interrogating Kara right then before Jeff snuffs her torch. The other one doesn't use any words at all and just leaves her behind.
Yeah. And no, didn't even turn around, didn't even look, which I love, or at least that's the way it was edited. It was just, it was so perfect. And I had to really rewatch it to truly enjoy everything about it. From the way that Angelina is standing, I think might be my favorite part when she asked for the jacket, because it's just so like, Natalie, can I have your jacket? In such a timid way.
It's like if you have like a 7-year-old child and you're like eating a nice, I don't know, a nice meal, and they're like, can I have some? I don't want my cut up hot dog. And like, you see them really try to put the puppy dog eyes on. This is something I'm probably going to need to anticipate and also try to like forbid myself from giving in, because I am such a pushover in that regard. Like, if I was Natalie, I'd be like, oh my God, Angelina, you poor thing. Yes, of course. Take my jacket, take my pants, take my entire wardrobe. I'll walk out of this game naked if it means making you comfortable.
Your baby is going to have so many jackets. Like, you get a jacket and you get a jacket.
Yeah, I'm just going to cover my baby. I'm going to give my baby like this coat, my pea coat, and just let it grow into it over the course of 20 something years.
Oh, that's so cute.
I'll try to be the best dad that I can be. So I'm sure we'll get into many, many more of our thoughts over the course of the episode, because not only did you have all this stuff going on Jebeni, you had the formation of the Bro Chachos with the restructuring of Bro Chacho Incorporated, which I have a bone to pick with Mr. Hennigan, because I call me old fashioned, Liana. I don't know if I want to mix business with politics. So I feel like John Hennigan, CEO of Bro Chachos Limited, needs to divest his holdings and resign from the position if he truly wants to be mayor of Slamtown.
Okay, that's what I was super confused about, because I was like, how does this relate to Slamtown? Because during that discussion, somebody, I think it was Dan or maybe Christian, said we have to have an election. And I was like, wait, I'm sorry. I thought Bro Chachos was a separate thing, or is this part of Slamtown? Because this could be a serious conspiracy theory of some collusion going on. And I think we need to really dig into this.
And who's voting? Like, are we, because we realize that, you know, Slamtown is full of essentially a population of indentured servants, people who have gotten slammed, who don't necessarily want to be there. Are they forced to do these elections? And like you said, is there ballot rigging going on? Can we use vote nullifiers and vote steals in this election? There's a lot of complications here.
Well, that's what I was thinking. If they're going to have an election, it's definitely the ballot box is going to be stuffed. There's going to be voter fraud. You know, you're going to lose the beatnik vote, right? I just feel like this could. I agree with you. Was it actually Brochachos Limited? Is that another company?
I don't think they actually called it that. We just know that Dan is the president. We have John as CEO. We have Christian as head of awesome stuff. HAS, which I was a bit confused by this, Leon. I wish I had the sound recording, but he goes, I'm HAS, like an avocado.
Like Haas avocados, HASS.
Oh, I do not know popular brands of avocados. So I was completely confused. I'm like, is that representative? Is he like the pit of the avocado nestled within these other two green guys?
Wait, what was his position again? What does it stand for? Haas, HAS?
Head of awesome stuff.
Head of awesome stuff. Yes, that is the job you really truly want. But see, then that one was confusing because I feel like head of awesome stuff really is a government position. I feel like they're conflating the two.
Well, I don't know. Does head of awesome stuff, is it sort of like all title, no purpose? You know, did Christian essentially go for the thing that's going to get him the nameplate on the door, but not necessarily something that he needs to work on intrinsically? Because I feel like it's so vague that, you know, anything can be considered awesome. And so maybe it's either the most valuable job or the least valuable job in the company.
I feel like that's a job that Tyson would like to have. Where it's just like you get the parking spot and the nameplate, but nothing else. Also, what is a cagenius?
Yeah, I was confused about that. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, like a cagenius, it's more than a genius. Like, I don't know Latin that well, but I don't think ca is like a prefix that means more than. Because I can't even think of the last time I've heard ca in front of something to make it more than what it is.
I have never heard that before. And it was such a throwaway line that didn't even fit with the rest of the Brochacho stuff. These are the moments where I really want live feeds for Survivor. Like, I know it's never going to happen, but I need to know more about what cagenius means.
Liana, if you ask for live feeds of Survivor, Nick's going to create even more nicknames to just go along with the Big Brother comparisons.
Oh, no. Everything will have a name. Oh, it's going to be brutal. I did hear, oh, my gosh. Okay, so not to, like, make it super. Okay, so you know that there have been those mysterious packages that have been delivered to people who have been critical of Donald Trump. I did hear Bomb Squad on the radio and Bomb Squad and Alliance in Big Brother. I just started laughing because I had this mental image of Beast Mode Cowboy, who's part of the Bomb Squad when he played Big Brother, like being in charge of the safety of Cory Booker and others. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, no.
Come here, Mr. Booker. Judy Chop.
Dude, chap. Yeah, exactly.
I know a bomb when I see it. I know when a pickle's inside a banana peel. I know when things aren't what they seem.
and then he like falls on the rocks and gets medically evacuated from the bomb squad.
Yeah, I there definitely have been, I think, just to go a bit tangential, like certain terms that exist out in the real world that have been, I want to use the term ruined by experiences, you know, watching reality TV and giving our attention into the nitty gritty of it all. But I do feel like there are certain phrases, like at the end of the day, using another Caleb Reynolds terminology, and he was on Survivor, so I feel like we're not going too tangential here. But I feel like there are certain things that, like, I don't know, almost impair the way you take them in. You know, we heard stories all the time, like people overhearing certain phrases and then in their office, and it makes them laugh. So you gotta love the fact that reality TV just seeps into our brains. You know, the winds have blown over permanently, like the shelter that hides us from these things seeping into our lives.
Heard that. Also, for the camps being destroyed, I'm not gonna lie, for a brief moment, because I was like, what if one camp gets destroyed more than others? I'd like production to go out there and just sort of
kick it over.
Kick down someone else's camp. It's like, oh, the Jabroni tribe's camp is fine. Like, let's just knock it over.
Well, you know, you can call to do that, the detonators.
This is like the hide and go seek veto. All right, this is too much Big Brother.
Too much Big Brother. Let's get back into Survivor and let's segue back. We'll start in our usual fare with the B&B. Let's go to Miss Natalie here, as both Lyrsa and Nick wrote on their votes for her. Obviously, a magnetic figure in these first and ultimate five episodes for Natalie. And she was a big magnetic figure before the season. I remember that in the preview for, you know, at the end of Ghost Island, she was the most, I'd say she's the most memorable of the six that I think we heard from. So I'd be intrigued to hear from you, Liana, what you thought Natalie was going to bring to the game come pre-merge.
Yeah, so I personally really enjoyed Natalie in the preseason, but I did have her going pre-jury in my prediction. So this is what I wrote. The Goliath's early win streak keeps Natalie safe for a bit, but a swap leaves her with nowhere to hide. She attempts to take control of her new tribe with her authentic newspaper ways. While her tribe adores her as a person, she is weak in the challenges. In an attempt to save herself at Tribal, she makes a big attempt of calculating things, particularly pants business. But this move falls flat. Natalie is unanimously voted out and becomes a victim of a small six-person tribe focused on strength and not pants business. And then in parentheses, I wrote, not sure what pants business is, which, to be fair, jacket business, pants business.
Hey, you were on close. The money with the fabric. I think you just were focusing in truly on a Boris fashion on the lower half rather than the upper half. I love her authentic newspaper business as well, because that basically confirms that she is not fake news. And she went out there saying that she was going to be authentically real and honest, even if it was to her detriment.
Yeah, exactly. So apart from the fact that while her tribe adores her as a person, a little bit of a miss there, I feel like the rest was pretty solid.
So that was written by the bot as well.
Yeah, the bot wrote authentic newspaper ways and big attempt of calculating things, particularly pants business.
I was gonna say, it's pretty cogent. Even like the pants business stuff, I feel like is not as bad as I.
Yeah, right. Maybe a little bit more to pick from. Natalie potentially was more verbose and said I a little less, which given her behavior on the actual episodes, you know, I don't know, it could be edited. Maybe should have said I more. But yeah, this one actually went pretty well.
So I also had Natalie going pre-jury. I said that she would find an idol that steers the others away from making her the first boot. I said she would come up with the most nicknames for her fellow players. And I said she would be one of the last boots before the merge. I said her closest ally would be Jeremy. And her worst enemy would be Nick.
Actually, okay, I forgot to read mine, but I said her closest ally was Mike White. And her worst enemy was Alex. So, big swing and a miss on those for both of us.
Yeah, though, to be fair, I don't know. She had her worst enemy, I don't know, was Alex. Did you remember there was one previously on Survivor where she definitely called him Alex? And I can imagine that definitely ground on him. I'm assuming he's dealt with the life of this point of people calling him Alex instead of Alec.
Yeah, well, I think everybody else, we also, so many people have called him Alex. So, it's just par for the course, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know who to give it to at this point, since it is just two of us and we don't have a third party. But I will say, you know, she wasn't the first boot. She didn't necessarily find an idol, but she wasn't the first boot. She was one of the last boots before the merge, if we're assuming the pre-merge ends next week. And she did get in a fight with Nick. I made a big whiff when it came to her closest ally being Jeremy, even if from what we were presented, Jeremy tried to be her closest ally.
What nicknames did she come up with for anybody, though?
Green Jacket. Alex. He called him Alex at one time. What a great nickname.
Yeah, what a great nickname. No bro chachos or kajenius names coming from her, though.
No, definitely not. And maybe that's why Nick's her worst enemies, because he was coming up with the nicknames in front of her.
Oh my God. Speaking of Nick, though. Okay. So when he, okay, so it was the slingshots at the reward challenge. And I was like, oh my God, a slingshot. And then when Nick went to go do the second target, Nick found his slingshot. It was so exciting. I was so happy for him.
I know. And I'm happy that, you know, the Davids also beat the Goliath and Dan, who just was not able to hit it because no slingshot experience. He might be a Goliath in bloom, but I think he's already lost his touch.
I just imagine Jeff just being so overly excited of a David defeating a Goliath in a slingshot challenge. I mean, come on. You can't plan it better than that. Oh my gosh, the theme.
Yeah,
David's,
I can imagine,
always spinning feet down.
He's doing like laps around the course after everything. Like, oh my God. Oh, oh, oh man. Oh boy. That's how this game is played.
Yeah. Guys, did you see that? Wow. Amazing.
Yeah. So I want to talk a bit about Natalie before we segue out of this. There's going to be a lot to talk about with her, but I want to touch back into this ever-growing mystery of Angelina, John, and the showmans. I had thought this was a topic that was dead and buried. I sort of shared the same opinion as Josh Wigler a couple weeks back that, like, clearly this is fabricated by Jeremy, that this is not the reason why he went home. But from what Natalie told me this week in her exit press, she tells the story that essentially comes down to she had gotten word from John. John had said that Jeremy had made this sort of offhand comment about how, your husband better not find out about what you and John are doing. And Natalie, because Jeremy had apparently been just tearing into her since the very beginning, to the point of where she, according to her, he basically threw her off balance in the first challenge and caused her to have an injury early on, she decided to exact some revenge on him and put herself out of the very bottom of the Goliath by saying, "Oh, John, you're about to get married. Angelina, you have a husband. You have to nip this in the bud right now." So it's authentic news. It's not fake news, apparently, that Jeremy had said this comment off the cuff. And in a manner of speaking, it helped him get eliminated, at least according to Natalie. I don't think these two would corroborate their sources, considering the opinions they have of each other. So, yeah, I don't want to. It's crazy that I need to bring this back into the spotlight. But it appears, at least from Natalie's perspective, that it's sort of confirmed, right?
Well, and then I think you throw in when Natalia was voted out last week and she sort of just refused to comment on the situation. And then everyone's like, oh, my gosh, the denial. That must mean, you know, it must be true. Everybody's like, nah. But I think, I don't know, the evidence is starting to come together. We need, who is the crime minister in Slamtown? Oh, no, but he'd be under John Hennigan's rule, so he would be, couldn't be impartial,
Exactly.
Right?
Very biased. Also, did you mean to make, like, crime minister a pun on prime minister?
Obviously, it was definitely intentional.
I like this, because there's so few, non-corrupt people in Slamtown that they have to sort of, like, push positions together. So this person is also the head of crime busting, but also the minister of the town. Like, he takes the day off on Sundays to teach a different law, the Lord's law.
You know what? Now I'm also just imagining. Okay, so you know how Natalie, when she was sort of doing her negotiation tactic with Nick about the jacket thing, and Nick was like, "It's bullying." Now I'm picturing Natalie in the Slamtown mob. Man, it'd be a shame if anything were to happen to your shelter.
Yeah. Then Nick wakes up, his jacket's torn to shreds. There's like one sleeve in his bed, and he screams.
Yeah, exactly. There's like threads of fabric, much like a horse head in bed. It's perfect. Yeah.
Your jacket is sleeping in the closet.
Yeah. Oh, I think we could really. So I think T-Bird was the one who talked about this, that Mike White's the writer and is going to have so many ideas from being with all these people. We need to pitch this idea to Mike White of this corrupt government of Slamtown, because I think that it's got legs.
Yeah, I think that Mike could definitely do like a Slamtown, like adult animated series where they just sort of, like your Simpsons or your Bob's Burgers, just really flesh out this ensemble, including Crime Minister Natalie Cole. Or I could have to change the name to like Cataly Knoll or something simple. Right.
Yeah, let's call her Cataly. And then also, it's got to be better than the Emoji Movie. So I think it's a win-win.
Yeah, Mike will do anything for a paycheck, which includes getting rid of Natalie, because that'll help make him some money, hopefully, at the end of the day.
Right, yeah, I'm sure that's what he's motivated by.
Well, let's move on here to our first segment. And you know what? What is old is new again here on the B&B. We thought this segment, which we tried out a year ago, was dead and gone. But you know what? With so much freaking talk about jackets this past episode, we thought it was time to revisit an old chestnut here on the B&B. We're going back, Liana, to Buffer Snuff.
Woot woot. Yeah, I remember the first time we tried this. It was with Rob in our preseason podcast, our very, very first podcast. Yeah, and who would be surprised to know that a game or a activity based on visual clues and visual inputs doesn't actually work on an audio only podcast. But I think this one is going to work out.
Yes, I am vigorously nodding my head in agreement at that one.
I am giving you a very enthusiastic thumbs up.
So we're trying to sort of bridge that gap. We wanted to bring it back because not only it was the jacket stuff, the main thread, as it were, of this episode, but also in five episodes, I feel like there have been certain fashion choices that have been building over the course of the season that we want to remark on, because they still have not gotten their bathing suits. So we have seen a lot of certain pieces of clothing, which is nice. So we can sort of comment upon them. As you know, Leon and I are both the paragons of fashion. We are the I don't know what the mashup position would be in Slam Town.
Fashion minister.
Yeah, the fashion man. Everyone just sort of takes turns being a minister. Everyone sort of picks jobs out of a hat in that regard, or a chore wheel, a ministry wheel. But so what we're going to do, for those of you that might not remember the game, is I have a list here of pop fabric or clothing items that the survivors have been wearing over the course of this season, and we are going to each give them either a buff, a thumbs up, or a snuff, a thumbs down when it comes to the fashion choice. And new to this iteration, you all can follow along as well. If you go to bit.ly/buff or snuff, that'll take you right to the album that contains all the pictures we'll be referring to for this version of Buff or Snuff. So we won't be able to draw you as much of a mental picture, but you'll be able to see it yourself to really gain your own opinions about it.
Yeah, and we'll do our best to describe the item as we talk about it. But, you know, thankfully now we've seen, like you said, Mike, a couple episodes, five episodes of people wearing these outfits. So hopefully you remember, or if not, look out for it in the next episode.
All right, well, let's start here with, there are a couple of jackets as the main focus, but let's start with the one that I arguably made the bigger splash. It's Natalie's aforementioned jacket that was not given to Angelina. She brandished it in her final words and even gloated about the fact that she was wearing it now. Liana, buff or snuff Natalie's blue coat?
Oh my gosh. Well, I think I have to give this a buff. Although, what's it made out of? So it's this blue coat, but it seems to be made out of some sort of fabric. I mean, well, like, all coats.
I was going to say, all things
coats
are made out of, yeah, it's not made out of paper, so that's, we can eliminate that.
Right. Well, no, I'm just saying it looks like it would absorb water, because that would be the only reason why I might snuff it, but it looks super warm.
Yeah, though I think, didn't Tyson say something at the Reno at all about how, like, wool socks, even though they absorb water, they insulate? So maybe that's sort of the same policy with this, because it looks sort of like a pea coat material.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's like a mid-waist pea coat sort of looking thing. Yeah, it looks super comfortable. And didn't she say, I know in her exit interview with Rob, Natalie said that the jacket ended up being some sort of a fluke of how she got it. I don't know, Mike, if in your exit press she told you anything about that.
No, we did not get to the origin of the blue jacket. Maybe this is like the sisterhood of the traveling jacket, where, like, she has this close group of friends and they decide to sort of, the jacket fits all of them and they take them in all these locations. Maybe that's why Natalie couldn't give Angelina the jacket, because she owed it to Blake Lively and Amber Tamblyn when she got back to the States.
Yes, exactly. It wasn't part of her core group of traveling jackets, I guess.
The other fun thing about this is I did sort of like a lookup of the hex code of this, the color of this jacket, because it's very tough to describe. And I believe the color that they came up with was strong cerulean, which makes sense considering that Natalie liked to say that everything about her exudes strength.
That is perfect. I thought for a second, because you were looking up the color codes, that this was going to be one of those blue, black, white, gold dress things. And I was like, oh no. Oh no. Are we in for one of these?
Yes. Is it hashtag cerulean or hashtag cyan? Which team are you on?
Hashtag strong cerulean, though. I didn't even know that that was a color.
Yeah. I mean, I guess cerulean, I only thought about the Pokemon city, but I guess it's a color, and it also can either be weak or strong. It's a very, I guess you could say, like, it's a Goliath cerulean.
Yeah, a very Goliath color. Although, you know, their tribe color was purple. So I don't know. Maybe you can mix cerulean and, you know, some sort of green color, the Teva green maybe, and get the Goliath color. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that this season in particular, the producers did something where, like, they did sort of matching complementary colors. Like, we'll talk about how the Davids got a lot of pinks to go with the oranges. Well, it looks like You know, the Goliath's got a lot of like blues and dark greens to go with the purple. Reminds me a lot of like Timbira when they got like, I remember Sierra's, the initial OG Sierra's like black and white striped shirt or like all these other random matching things. And again, as someone who is not that attuned to fashion, I like it just so we're not seeing literally one color the entire time.
Well, I was going to say, maybe there's some like color theory behind it. You know, it's like, oh, you should paint your bedroom blue because it's calming or something like that. Like maybe blues and, you know, the greens and the blacks. Those are very strong color, very Goliath colors.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there is something in there about like Goliath colors versus David colors. Maybe that's why the orange stripes have always like sucked so far in recent years, is because like it's a weak color.
Yes. Oh, we just cracked the code. I think that this is definitely the case. There's definitely some sort of like mentality behind the colors. Like if you're wearing orange, you just feel like you're defeated because orange is such a weak color. I don't know. I think we'll dig into this. We need a color expert. If anybody is a color expert, please let us know if we are anywhere close to being on the right track.
Well, I'm looking this up now on colormatters.com. And it says orange is vibrant. It's hot, healthy, fruity, and engaging, but it can be abrasive and crass. It is a polarizing color. People either love it or detest it.
Well, then Natalie really should have been wearing orange. Blue is totally the wrong color. Blue is supposed to be calming.
Well, let's move on here. I'll give this a buff as well, because I think it's been a while since I've seen someone brandish a jacket in the Carmen Sandiego family. On Survivor. So I'm gonna give it the thumbs up there, and she does rock it well. Let's move on to the other jacket in contention here. Let's move on to Lyrsa's amazing one color dream coat. Now Natalie says this is lime green, but at least from the picture I'm looking at, this does not look lime green to me, right, Liana?
No, it's definitely more of a blue green. I feel like lime green is more yellow in tint. I'm not going to lie, I had not noticed this coat at all. And once everybody started talking about the jackets, I was like, what? Because I guess maybe because most of the time they were showing them, it wasn't when all the torrential downpours were happening. Or if it was, I was just paying attention to all the rain. So I didn't really notice all of these jackets. But I mean, to have something be so coveted, like that's truly amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it looks really nice. It's well insulated. I'm trying to remember. I think Zeke had like a yellow members only jacket in either Game Changers or Millennials versus Gen X. But other than that, I can't really think of the group of survivors wearing members only jackets is a very members only inclusive like group of people.
Wasn't that the jacket that then Sarah Lacina ended up with? Zeke's jacket? Yes. I'm pretty sure it was Game Changers.
So maybe Angelina was trying to pull from the book of Sarah Lacina in more than one way. Rob already compared the jacket thing to Sarah getting, you know, trying to fake the reaction to getting the legacy advantage from Sierra Dawn Thomas. But maybe Angelina thought like, oh, Sarah took Zeke's jacket. I must take Lyrsa's jacket now.
Yeah, exactly. This is truly Sarah Lacina was a game changer. I think just solidifying why she was on the season, voting people out for jackets for the legacy advantage. Just truly an iconic queen
and game changer and a wardrobe changer. All right, Liana, should we buff or snuff Lyrsa's green jacket here? I would say it's more of like a mint green from the angle that we're looking at.
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, I think it's kind of ugly, but is this, am I buffing or snuffing if I were on Survivor? Because I feel like that's sort of the criteria. Or is this just, would I wear this in my daily life? Because would I wear this in my daily life? Absolutely not.
Yeah, I mean, no, when it comes to Survivor, it's any port in a storm. Like, I would buff a muumuu because it would keep me warm at night on Survivor.
I just have this mental image of you and your baby wearing matching muumuus.
It's happening. Some blue muumuus. It's coming.
Well, the blue muumuus. Ouch. Oh my goodness. All right. Yes. Well, that's true. Okay, sure. So, muumuus aside, I would then definitely snuff this jacket. I'm not crazy about it.
See, I like it. Maybe it's just because I'm sort of like Dan, I'm just sort of visually attracted to green. But I like it. I think that Lyrsa pulls it off. She has the weird sort of interesting colors going on with the purple hair with the green. It's not too matchy-matchy, so you know what, I see the appeal in it. I'm gonna buff it. It's better than a lot of the jackets I currently have outside of the island.
Well, first of all, I think that says more about you than it does about Lyrsa's jacket. But I just think that I'm now realizing Lyrsa got to go out there with a lot of Goliath colors, purple hair, a green jacket. I don't know. Someone in wardrobe should have been like, you have to. OK, look, we'll let you play the season, but you have to re-dye your hair orange.
Hear me out here, Liana. What if there's this idea of a Goliath mole? Like, they pulled one person aside and said, look, you're actually a Goliath. We're going to put you in with the Davids, and you have to naturally blend in. And what if that person was Lyrsa?
Okay, first of all, I absolutely love this idea because it fits in with the Slamtown underground mole people.
Lyrsa, the Moligarchy is back.
Yes, the Moligarchy is back, and it is now invading the Davids tribe from the Goliaths, because the Goliaths just have all the advantages in the world, and the Davids are just can't catch a break. If anything bad were to happen, of course it would be to the Davids.
Yeah, and remember when they lost the second immunity challenge, Lyrsa was like, oh, these Goliaths are just so damn good. They're so damn strong and big. I wonder if it was her just trying to, like, butter up, you know, her opponents that are actually her allies.
Right, exactly. And then make her own allies, theoretically allies, the Davids, feel, you know, defeated and like they can never win, get them down on their luck. And then that's why B had to go. She probably kicked her knee while she was sleeping because, like, B's trying to, you know, pump up
apparently
the team.
Apparently Goliaths like to do that, throw people around to injure them.
Yeah, right. That's a theme that we see emerging. I mean, this is really all coming together.
Listen, I'm going to give this like a double buff just for the conspiracy theory alone.
Perfect.
Two buffs up. All right, let's move on to a jacket that wasn't the focus of this episode, but I want to keep on the jacket trail here. Let's talk about one that was definitely a focus preseason, less so. I feel like we've seen less of it during the season, to the point of where the screen grab I had to make of it for the album was from like Jeff Probst introducing the Goliaths. Let's talk about John Hennigan's Mayor of Slamtown jacket.
Oh my God, let's talk about it. Okay, so when you first mentioned this, I didn't remember because it was from a lot of the preseason stuff, like you said, but it's this leather jacket, which from the front looks fine, looks like a standard leather jacket. And then on the back, in like such crappy block bubble lettering, says Mayor of Slamtown. Like, he clearly took it to a boardwalk somewhere and was like, hey, people that make t-shirts in like 10 seconds with stencils, yeah, can you spray paint Mayor of Slamtown on the back of my jacket? That's exactly what this looks like.
Yeah, what they don't show you is that this is actually a second draft. The first one was just a caricature of John Hennigan riding a dune buggy on the beach with a giant head.
I would like to imagine, yeah, all of the sort of steps that it took to get to this jacket. Like, this was the best idea that they could come up with. They went through all of the boardwalk and they were like, okay, no, we definitely don't want the caricature guy. We have to go with the really crappy spray painted shirt guy.
I'm not going to buff this, but it makes me feel nostalgic about like Spencer Gifts, right? Doesn't like Spencer Gifts have a very similar logo to this?
Yeah, I think so. Because it's that, you know, it's supposed to be graffiti, but it's accessible to the masses kind of graffiti. Like, this isn't Banksy. We're not going to see this all of a sudden get shredded as he's wearing it. Although
could you
that
imagine
would be
if John like Gay's like, oh, he's sure you can, like, if he got voted out and he said, oh, you can have my jacket, and then it instantly gets shreds or throws itself into the fire.
Oh my God. No, it just all of a sudden started shredding. Although I did see, so I think T-Bird talked about this. Somebody had tweeted at her about that he, like, Natalie should have just thrown it in the fire. The Casuals, we're going to get to Casuals Corner later, also had a number of ideas about throwing it in the fire. So I think that really would have been a home run move to just burn the jacket.
And, you know, John's a performer. It would have been performance art in that regard. So, Liana, would you buff or snuff the Mayor of Slamtown jacket at the end of the day?
This is the ugliest effing jacket. No, I am snuffing this. I would never wear it. Like, maybe it's supposed to be ironic in some way. It's just so ugly.
Well, I like it as well because if you look at like the two pictures I put up there, it's very like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, where like the first one, John, like, looks very pleasant. He has his hair combed back. And then for some reason, I don't know what the angle I caught, like, his hair is unruly, Neanderthal like, and he's got Mayor of Slamtown. So maybe there's also sort of like a difference of personalities between John Hennigan and the Mayor of Slamtown. That's a constant battle. Now you throw in CEO of the Bro Chachos, and it seems like we're dealing with multiple personalities here.
That's right. Definitely a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type situation with John Hennigan. But I think then it goes to the, you know, Slam Town on the outset, you know, seems like, yeah, we're going to go slam people at Slam Town. But really, you have the seedy underbelly of Slam Town. It just goes with everything. I mean, come on.
Well, let's move on to another Goliath here. Let's talk about Mike White. Now, Mike, I want to talk about two wardrobe choices for Mike White. First, his hat, which I have termed the Baby Gap fedora in the very first episode of this season. But also, Mike's other choice of clothing is this dark blue t-shirt that has printed across it, "Can't we all just get along?" But it's in some sort of like weird italic font that's printed diagonally, and it's very faded. Liana, what are your thoughts about both of these items?
Yeah, the guy at the boardwalk making Mike's t-shirt was definitely drunk at the time. I was like, Mike, it's pretty straight.
He didn't make the t-shirt. Mike just asked for his t-shirt of like, hey, like you're looking like you're having fun operating the Tilt-A-Whirl. I'll trade you shirts. I need something to bring on to Survivor that doesn't have a brand on it.
Yeah, can't we all just get along? I think I liked it with maybe it was Josh Wiggler who was talking about this, but when he was voting out Jeremy or something, he just like, you know, so apathetically slowly saunters to the voting urn. It's like, Jeremy, gonna vote for Jeremy, can't we all just get along? Like, such a sad sack t-shirt.
Well, I think it's interesting if you like the great Werner from Survivor South Africa, the comparison he made a couple weeks back. If you compare Mike to Ben Linus from Lost, it is a very like, it has a little bit of like malicious, sarcastic undertone to it of like, you know, Ben Linus was all about turning people against each other for his betterment. And so maybe Mike is sort of trying to suggest this feeling of community and communication only to sort of subvert himself when he turns on someone like Natalie.
See, that makes it so much better. And I think that that's probably more accurate because Mike White is such a smart guy. And I think that he would totally do something along these lines that, of course, there's got to be a dual meaning. He's not just going out there saying, kumbaya, everybody, let's just all get along. That's just not in his personality.
I just really like this shirt because it evokes like, you know, when you did like plays in high school and you would get like the show shirt that had like, ooh, here's a logo of like, Carousel 2006. And then on the back, it'll have like some sort of inside joke printed on it. But after years and years and number of washes, it just completely fades away. That's sort of what the t-shirt looks like at this point.
Yeah, well, and being on Survivor, I'm sure doesn't help. I actually don't mind the t-shirt. The hat is really where I draw the line. That stupid fedora. I just want to smack it off his head. And you know what's weird is that sometimes it looks like it's way too small. Like you said, it's like a Baby Gap fedora. But the picture I'm looking at now sort of looks like it fits his head. So maybe this is another case of the traveling hat because it like shrinks to fit somebody, you know, and it grows to fit someone else. It just happens to not know what to do for Mike White.
And there's also one point where like he wore it backwards, I think, which made it look kind of like a Gilligan-esque bucket hat. There's just he's trying to, I think, make it work in many different ways. And I don't know if he's unlocked the way yet.
Yeah, the Brotherhood of the Traveling Fedora that he just can't figure out.
That sounds like a bad pickup artist type of thing. Like, yeah, we'll all wear fedoras and we'll try to, you know, get some honeys.
What? Yeah, okay. Maybe that's what the Bro Chachos can work on next.
Yeah, exactly. A fedora you could share amongst your bros. Let's move on here to someone who's
I just want to say buffed the shirt, I snuffed the hat.
I'm going to buff both because I admire Mike's tenacity in trying to make this hat work. And no, it looks like he has some longevity for the game. I think by the time he gets to the end, I think he'll finally figure out a way for the hat to work. I don't know if I can write that into my preseason predictions, but I'll put that lure out right now.
All right, deal.
All right, well, let's move on here to someone whose fashion item only really came to prominence, in my opinion, when he did last episode. Alec has this Tommy Bahama dark blue Hawaiian shirt. Liana, what are your thoughts about it?
Okay, so the shirt, like you said, it didn't really stand out to me at the beginning, but during that tribal, not in this past episode, but the episode before, where Natalia goes home, and I'm supposed to be paying attention to everything that's happening at tribal, and the only thing I could look at was Alex's shirt. So I was like, what is, are those flowers? And then for a brief second, I was like, this looks like my aunt's curtains. Like, she took down her curtains and then, like, sewed him a shirt real quick before he went out there. Like, that's the pattern that I'm seeing.
I love this. It's like a Maria Von Trapp thing where, like, his mom was like, oh, Alec, you need a nice shirt to keep you warm during the torrential downpours. Here, I'll snip, snip, snip. Take this curtain I've worn. It, you look suiting on you. You love this pattern.
Yeah, exactly. Very Gone with the Wind-esque. We're just going to throw this together. And then combine that with the boxers that he's wearing. They also have some sort of like floral pattern on them. Then there's like a bud that kind of looks like a little weed bud. I don't really know. I don't really know what's going on here, but it's like very, very floral.
Well, no wonder why we didn't really, you know, pay attention to Alec on the show until last episode. He's wearing stuff that makes him blend in with the foliage.
This is the camouflage getup. Makes him hide. Oh my God, looking for idols, listening to people. If Ben had been wearing this, like, we never would have seen him, Ben Driebergen, you know, like, listening to people. Actually, okay. And, oh my God, and he kind of looks like John Cena, so the camouflage thing is there. I think a lot. Okay, yep, yep, yep. This is a next level strategy. This now is game changers. If Alec hadn't violated his NDA, I could see him coming back.
Well, contract changers. Well, speaking briefly about like who Alec looks like, because I feel like it's gone around the internet. You say he looks like John Cena?
Yeah, I think he looks like John Cena.
I think he looks like star of the hit CBS sitcom The Neighborhood, Max Greenfield. Like, I feel like he could be related to him.
Okay, I could see. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I could definitely see a cross between John Cena and Max Greenfield. That's something, because he's got that the similar facial expressions, I feel like, of Max Greenfield.
Well, yeah, the one that I picked right now is also him sort of like, I don't know, he's hunched over for some reason. Maybe his floral underwear is on too tight, but it looks like he's ready to tackle somebody.
Some underwear in bloom.
Yeah, exactly. So I will give him a buff on this just because it came literally out of nowhere. But I love how like 1980s house party it is. It makes me really excited. It just shows how, again, laid back and carefree Alec is, that he can pull off this Hawaiian shirt when, as they say on The Simpsons, the only people that can pull it off, according to them, are gay people and big fat party animals.
Yeah, I think he probably would. I don't know. Maybe big fat party animal. That seems like Alec's vibe. I think I'm going to buff it too, mainly because like I would want an apron made out of this fabric. So I'll call up his aunt when we're done with this and see if I can get the remaining curtains.
Well, let's move on to someone who also might have some jungle ready gear. Not so much camouflage, but Davey, I think we more so note him for his pink polo. We've seen a couple times Davey has this odd all cargo getup. Between the like sleeveless jacket and the shorts. Liana, what are your thoughts about Davey's Jumanji-esque getup here?
Yeah, well, when you were like, yeah, he's wearing all cargo. Like, his shirt is, like, I knew he had cargo shorts, but for some reason I didn't put two and two together that his vest was also somehow cargo. This was like, you know how he got asked to come out later on to the season? It was like he was just rummaging through whatever was lost and found from production, and because it was nothing but, like, cargo shorts and vests, because they need pockets for lots of stuff. That's what I imagine, because also the shirt is way too big for him.
Yeah, I like this. So like production was like, you know what, we'll do you a solid because you came in so late. Like, we confiscate these from players because we usually take things away that have so many pockets to hide idols. You can have your pick amongst the lost and found.
Yeah, exactly, because that's all what I could think when I saw this. I was like, oh my gosh, look at, think about how much beef jerky he could hide in all of these pockets. Like, there's no way production would allow this to happen.
I'm surprised he hasn't found more idols at this point, considering he needs one for every pocket.
That's true. He's got, okay, let's see. I can see four very clearly, and there's definitely six because he's got the upper pockets, probably back pockets. I mean, we could see Davey out here with like eight idols. No idol nullifier will ever stop him. Just yeah, be throwing him out at tribal.
What Blues Traveler can be to harmonicas, Davey can be to idols.
Yeah, he needs all the pockets for his harmonicas. Watch out, Popper. Oh, no.
So I'm going to give this a buff just because I admire the sheer audacity of it. Plus the fact that I can imagine when it rains, it probably gets super duper heavy. So he has to deal with those cautions. And while you said he might have just pieced this together from scraps left by survivors past, I think it shows he's literally wearing history, and he hopes to make history on his own.
Okay, I buff this also just simply because I love the utility of it all. Like, that's how I pick most of my clothing that I wear, because I'm in a lab. I'm always running around. I need pockets, and I appreciate all of these pockets. So I would wear something like, oh my goodness. That's what I should do. I should start wearing more cargo. Is cargo back? Is cargo fashionable? Please tell me it is.
I don't think it ever left, personally. I hope not. I own several things made of cargo.
Okay, well, I don't know why I'm asking you. So that probably means that cargo's not in, so I should not do this.
Yeah, believe,
but I'll keep in mind,
any fashion opinion I have, the actual opposite is true.
Right, okay, we'll go with that.
Let's finish up with a couple more here. Here's one that has popped up a lot. Christian's robot shirt. Too on the nose for you, Liana?
Okay, so the first time I saw this, you know, you think it's like, oh, it's nerd chic, you know, he's a robot, ahaha. And that's like, oh, so yeah, he has a dual degree in mechanical engineering and computer science and literally builds robots for a living. So I actually like it because it's not sort of nerd chic. Like, he's literally a nerd. I don't know if that makes any sense, but love this one. I'm definitely buffing it.
I mean, I think relating to the nickname that Mike White, not Natalie, mistress of nicknames, gave him on the first day, this feels like something they would wear on the Big Bang Theory, where, like, it's not brand related, but they're like, hey, they're smart. They like to wear shirts with robots on them. So we'll put a bunch of, like, stock non-denominational yeah. robots on a shirt and give it to him.
Yeah, like, I imagine he would also wear a shirt that just says science and there's like an atom molecule on it. You know, it's like so generically science. Like, it's not really anything particularly related, but this is a similar vein. Yet he literally builds robots for a living, like as a faculty member. So somehow, I don't know, it works.
Do you think he like did the cafe press himself for the shirt?
I think he went down to that same boardwalk guy.
The boardwalk gets really popular when everyone like flies out to LA before they go to Fiji. They like take a quick stop on the boardwalk. They're like, all right, we need some last minute wardrobe items. And that's when the guy really rakes it in those two times of the year.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay, we'll go to see the one guy in Santa Monica who we know can make all these T-shirts.
All right, so I'll give it a buff. As vague as it is, I do enjoy it. And Christian, much like everything Christian does, is able to pull it off.
Oh, yeah, of course. Which you wouldn't think. There's something so unique about him. I'm still trying to nail it down. I think there's something with his body movements, the way he moves. Like when he was in this episode, he was like, you know, we're all the Davids. That's the Goliath. I don't know. There's something about his, like the way he was hunched over or something. It's just something that is really fascinating to watch him on TV.
Absolutely. And I can't really figure it out either. I know I saw something, I think it was Sarah Channon, who tweeted this out like after the first episode about how maybe a key difference. I know a conversation that Rob and Tyler Fredrickson had was like, what does Christian have that Ryan Ulrich doesn't in terms of audience reception? Part of it might be that, you know, Christian is a nerd in his early 30s. Ryan and Cochran were nerds in their early to mid 20s. And I wonder if age brings a certain like confidence, because Christian has an interesting sort of weight to what he says, whereas people like Ryan and Cochran give similar musings, but maybe just because of the timbre of their voice, it comes off a little more like a lilt than something that has a dramatic finish to it.
Well, I think part of it also is the fact that he's being his authentic self, which I know that was talked about before. He definitely comes across, but he's almost got the creds to back it up. Like if you look at his Slamtown resume, it's like, oh yeah, he has his PhD. He did his postdoc at Georgia Tech. Like, he's got the credentials to really back it up, really a heavy hitter in the as the robotics minister or Haas, whatever that was, of awesome stuff. Head of awesome stuff.
Yes, the avocado.
Yes, of course. Truly an avocado of his time.
Well, let's move on from the avocado to the abogado in Spanish, which is lawyer, Nick Wilson. So, yeah, that was a segue. So we're going to finish here on not only a fashion choice, but a combination that Nick has been touting most recently in this past episode when he was trying to work that snake maze. The orange boxers with the American flag socks. Liana, is this a winning combination in your opinion?
Okay, so socks, I love America, sure, whatever. The boxers, that's really what I want to talk about, because there's pocket watches on them, which I'm just trying to envision, like, being in the store, seeing a pair of boxers with pocket watches on them. Like if I saw like a bra and panties with pocket watches on them, I'd be like, you know what I love? Pocket watches. And I would like my undergarments to appropriately reflect my interests in timekeeping.
Yes, exactly. What? I do love finding out what time it is. And since I will be lacking a timepiece out on the island, I need a constant reminder that brings me back down to Earth.
Yeah, like maybe there's one for every time of day. That way, you know, they say like a broken clock is right twice a day, but like my boxers,
my ass is right twice a day.
I always know what time it is.
I love that. Like, look at the sun. It looks like it's right. I'd say it's about 3 inches down on my left thigh is what time it is.
Oh, no. This is not the type of sundial I'd like to talk about.
Yes, a very different type of sundial.
Nope.
Oh, boy.
I buff it, though.
Yeah, you buff it? You buff it? Yeah, I'm liking the, like, it's a contrast that somehow works. In my opinion, he is.
What is in contrast between time and America?
Well, I think it's the colors. I think it's red, white, blue, and orange.
Okay, sure.
It's just so, it's so out there. But I do like, you know, Nick's pulling his socks up completely. Like, he's not afraid to do that. For the longest time, I lived in my own personal fashion bubble where I thought that I couldn't pull up my socks, especially wearing shorts. I had to bunch them around my ankles. And darn it, at nearly 30 years of age, I decided that I'm going to take back my life. And I pull up my socks each and every time I wear shorts, much to my wife's chagrin. So I'm going to admire Nick for his valiant effort here as well.
Well, I don't know if you know this, Mike. They actually sell socks that stop at your ankle. They're called ankle socks. And then that way you don't really have to deal with this conundrum.
You've got to be kidding me. Is that a thing?
Wait, are you serious? Are you messing with me right now?
I'm not messing with you.
Oh, okay. Thank God. Oh, I was convinced. It was all that acting experience that you got in high school and your crappy t-shirts with inside jokes.
I'm a very good actress. Yes. No, I do enjoy ankle socks. So nothing, especially these cold times of year when you're out in the storms of life, nothing beats having a nice sock to pull up and really make you feel like a true American.
Pull yourself up by your own American socks. I think it would be better if he had the sock garter things. I think that would really complete the look. But
well, I think if you're trying to appeal to like the young people that, you know, proliferate much of Survivor, that having sock garters might not be the way to do it.
How dare you? Suspenders and sock garters are going to come back. I'm all about practicality. Okay, new Survivor outfit. Complete cargo. No time for belts, suspenders for sure, and socks with sock garters. I think I've got it down.
So you essentially want to look like Jungle Orville Redenbacher. That's your aesthetic?
That is my aesthetic. That's all I want to be. I think that's going to be my new Halloween costume, and no one is going to understand it. I'd be like, okay, guys, let me explain. Jungle Orville Redenbacher, like, it's just so perfect.
So again, feel free to check out all of our buff or snuff submissions at bit.ly/buff or snuff. Before we move forward to the next part of the B&B, I want to take some time to thank our first ever sponsor of the B&B. Hopefully they don't regret that after listening to the nonsense that's come before this. Green Chef. Now, what is Green Chef? Green Chef is a USDA certified organic company that includes everything you need to easily cook delicious meals that you can feel good about. Leon and I both got the chance to sample some Green Chef, and what I really enjoyed about it is that there are these step-by-step instructions that come, and it's quick and easy. Most of the meals take 20 to 30 minutes, and especially if you're coming home after a long day, you have a bunch of hungry tribe members around you, you need to eat some chicken, some KBC, if you will. It's quick and easy to use. Liana, tell me some more about your experience with Green Chef.
Well, the thing that I liked when I got my package, which first of all, Mike didn't remind me that we were going to be getting these boxes, and all of a sudden this food showed up. I know, but it was perfect because it really was this diverse array of foods. I had this sesame encrusted chicken, which was amazing, and then meatloaf also. So you sort of get these like classic comfort foods, and then also you get these global cuisines, which was really nice. And each ingredient is thoughtfully sourced. Its journey is tracked from planting to plating, which is always good to know. And I think my favorite part about Green Chef is that there's something for everybody because, okay, I've started playing around with fun diets. I'm doing paleo right now. And
define
Green Chef,
fun.
Okay, how dare you? I just really enjoy not eating carbohydrates and dairy. It's so fun. I'm just trying to be healthy, okay? But anyway, Green Chef, it's so easy with Green Chef to maintain a specialty diet and still enjoy new exciting options because paleo is, it can be super boring, I'm not gonna lie. But Green Chef makes it doable. It's organic ingredients also, and so you can just feel great about what you're eating and how it got to your table.
And Green Chef is extremely convenient and easy to use as well. Ingredients come pre-measured, perfectly portioned, and mostly prepped. As an example, Liana mentioned that sesame crusted chicken with stir-fry broccoli, edamame, carrots, and rice. Usually, you have to chop up those ingredients, and using a knife is always a bit, pun unintended, dicey. Sometimes they already came diced and sliced. You can just throw in. The Green Chef thinks dinner should be planned around your life, not the other way around. We've provided dishes such as roasted sesame crusted chicken, meatloaf and gravy, butternut squash chili with black beans, cheddar tortilla strips, and lime cream. A really diverse array of recipes. If you want $50 off of your first box of Green Chef, go to greenchef.us/survivor. Again, that's greenchef.us, .com/survivor for $50 off your first box of Green Chef. Bon appetit. All right, let's move on from that sumptuous meal and go into a bit more of a discussion heavy topic away from the jackets of it all. But I still kind of want to focus on Natalie and the fedora wearer, Mike White, because Mike White said something. He's very good with his words. It's so interesting. There was something that came out recently about like the confessional accounts through 5 episodes. And surprisingly, Mike White has the third most confessionals out of anyone this season. At least I was surprised because I was thinking Mike hasn't really been that involved with that many major storylines, but he does always sort of have quips. So it makes him a natural go-to. In this episode, he told, I think he told Lyrsa or Nick that Natalie has a master's in ungraciousness. So my question for this week is, how does one get a master's in ungraciousness?
Yeah, this was my favorite part. I loved that she only had a master's. Like, it's like, okay, she has maybe, you know, I got my bachelor's degree in awful social interaction and I got my master's in ungraciousness. I'm currently working towards my PhD in being an egg butthole. Like, I don't know. It seems like something that could really be just something on your resume, I think would really boost her work for sure.
Well, the other thing I was thinking about is like, what school offers this? Is there some sort of like unfinishing school where you learn like bad etiquette and that's how you earn your master's?
I think Phoenix Online, you can get your master's in ungraciousness. I don't know for a master's degree, do you have, because I know for a PhD, so I got my PhD in biomedical engineering and the whole idea is like, okay, you create new information for the world. So you have to discover something or build something that is new, is novel. Do you have to do the same for a master's degree? Because I wonder like, what would you create new and something new about ungraciousness? Is it the eggs? Was that her focus of her master's thesis? I don't know.
That might have been her thesis. And that was actually the other Jaboni members didn't realize it, but that was her presentation to them, was her being like, how to immediately ruin eggs, boil 12 of them and then leave them overnight in an air, you know, in a very murky, uncovered climate.
This was actually the final class that she had to take in order to get her degree. It was like, all right, we're going to send you out on Survivor and then you're going to enact this strategy in real life, write a paper on it and you're done.
What other Survivor players do you think are graduates of the Ungraciousness Masters program?
Oh, Lord. I think there has to be a number of them that have a master's in ungraciousness. I'm sure to varying degrees also. Like, who else could have a degree? I mean, Jatia, do you think, could have a degree in ungraciousness? I mean, she dumped out all the rice.
Yeah, but I feel like ungracious, because I feel like everything else from Jatia was unintentional. So, like, I feel like for ungraciousness, you need to, like, do you need to be purposeful in what you're doing? Because it does seem like also Natalie much to Jeremy's point, didn't have that much self-awareness as to, you know, how she was coming across. Because if she did, she would have maybe toned down the actions a bit.
Like, if you're going to get a degree in something, does that mean, like, do you have to be consciously aware? You know, so for example, somebody could just be good at dance, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're getting a degree in dance. You know, you have to then study that in some sort of official capacity. So I guess the question is Natalie just super gifted at being gracious in Mike White's eyes, or was she truly in an educational or vocational program to promote ungraciousness?
Yeah, so she could like almost fabricate it on her resume. I also do love, yes, Liana, I think it is a fact of life that you can't really get a degree unintentionally. I think you have to be in a program in order to get a degree. I'm thinking Judd from Guatemala could be, I think he has an M.A.D.D. in ungraciousness.
Maybe he was homeschooled in ungraciousness.
Yeah, so I'm sure maybe if we're fleshing out the last season's cast of Survivor pre-merge villains, which I think Natalie is now bumping someone out as a new member, I feel like they all sort of have between them 17 master's degrees in ungraciousness.
Yeah, truly the most educated tribe. Oh, wait, okay, so speaking of eggs, when this is so kind of random, but when Lyrsa was talking about Natalie being very egotistical, but with Lyrsa's accent, it sounded like egotistical. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is perfect. I don't think it's intentional, because it was all about the egg issue and she's being so egotistical.
Yeah, it absolutely isn't, but it's fantastic. Yeah, a nice little fun moment of editing. I feel like they had to keep it in there just because the puns wrote themselves, and so I'm happy that that yoke came across.
Yeah. Man, you're gonna be a dad soon. You're already great with the dad jokes, but I think just practicing them, you know, maybe you can get a master's degree in dad jokes from someplace.
Yeah, and I'll brandish that on the wall. It'll be a nice certificate. Let's graduate on from this question, Liana, and move on to what's next.
Okay, perfect. So we haven't done this yet since the regular season has started, but we are going to dive back in to Casual's Corner. So, Mike, I have questions for you where I have gone to the Survivor Facebook page and I have pulled comments that the Survivor Casuals have said about this specific episode. And then I have written comments also. So it is up to you. I will read three comments that I pulled from the episode and one comment that I wrote, and it's up to you to decide which one I wrote. That's how you get a point.
So in general, how are the casuals feeling about this season? It seems like the intense fandom is very much on board with it. Do the casuals feel the same way? Because I do feel like when it comes to Survivor, casuals and super fans have slowly started to get sort of on the same page, especially with how the past two seasons were received.
Yeah, so the casuals really, really like this season so far. And you can just tell based on the number of comments on the threads. So Ghost Island, not so many comments. A little harder to pull comment or content for Casuals Corner. But I actually had so much here that I had to cut down. So it really seems like the casuals are loving this season also. I think it's because they just have super strong opinions about a lot of the characters on the season. Some agree with the super fans, some don't. For example, no one really liked Natalie at all. So that was sort of their consensus on her, but definitely they're into this season.
All right, so let's dive into it. I'm here. Hopefully that means I'll be more attuned to the casuals than I usually am, but let's not put the cart before the horse.
All right, let's see. So first question is all about clothing suggestions from casuals for Angelina. All right, so A, I would have on a coat, scarf, earmuffs, long johns, sweater, leggings, socks, 7 pairs of underwear. I don't care. B, bring a jumper. Serves Angela right. C, membership only jacket. Request decline for Angelina. Or D, after so many seasons, I don't get why some contestants turn up in these outfits. High heels? Business jackets? I had to read, I can't even tell you how many comments I had to cut out. That was just like, why didn't Angela bring a coat? Why didn't Angela bring a coat? I feel like if we get some extra time, we should consider doing a PSA for the casuals at some point. But those comments I had to sift through. So many.
Well, so I feel like C C is real, because I do feel like the casuals do sort of suggest these jokes that don't necessarily land with the membership-only jacket. D is interesting, because it's very incredulous. But I don't know if you fabricated that incredulousness. A was what? The Randy from Christmas Story-esque, like, piling on the winter clothes, right?
Exactly. Earmuffs, long john sweater, leggings, socks, 7 pairs of underwear.
And then B was the jumper?
Yes.
I'm going to jump on B as the one you wrote.
Okay, I actually wrote C, which, what? How dare you, jokes that don't land.
Yeah. Well, that's egg all over my face.
Right. Well, hopefully it just doesn't spoil if you don't store it at the right temperature. All right, so actually, speaking of eggs, this next question is all about eggs. All right, so the first comment, A, Natalie put all her eggs in one jacket, ... or was it ...
What? That doesn't even make sense.
I know. Well, the first part is the joke. I'm pretty sure Rob tweeted that out.
Yes!
The last part was just like, wait, what? Okay, B, that woman was a large, bossy pain, and the egg thing would have sealed it with me. She knew nothing about eggs. C, fresh laid eggs that are not from a commercial farm are safe to keep at room temperature and they don't spoil. Bad decision to eat them all at once. Or D, wow, you can store eggs by burying them in the sand like turtles.
At first glance, I want to say D, because I feel like you would write that fact in there. But I wouldn't put it past the casuals too, as well. Let's see. What else? So we have large woman. That was B. C was the, like, well, actually comment from the fedora wearing Mike White's brethren.
Sure.
And A, what was A again?
A was Natalie put all her eggs in one
jacket. The joke that undid itself.
Or was it? Yeah,
I'm going to say you wrote D.
That is correct. I did write D. Also, I just want to note that at the time I saw A had 69 likes.
So nice.
Gonna throw that out there. Nice. Okay. All right. So the casuals are notorious for this. They have a tendency to get people's names wrong. So these comments are all about incorrect names. A, glad she is gone. I'm rooting for Letitia. B, yeah. Choo choo! I'm all aboard the Drew train.
Drew.
See, I'm glad she's gone. Anyone else think that she looks like she's related to Shrey? S H R E Y. Or D, I laugh so hard watching Angelina straight up beg for a jacket from Ms. Petty. The lady just like, nope. Talk to the hand.
Okay, so these. There's mispronounced names. We have Letitia. We have Drew.
Drew.
Which,
yep.
There's a whole mystery as to who Drew is. We have Shrey, which makes me feel like they meant to write Shrek and they misspelled it. Or what was D again? Miss Petty?
Ms. Petty.
Ooh, I like Ms. Petty. Just because that reminds me of Alex Au from Big Brother. And so, like, Miss Petty would be like, that'd be something that she would try to market as a fashion thing.
Like Tom Petty's wife.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, the widow Petty. I feel like Drew feels real as well, because I'm fixated on who, maybe Alec? And it was just them connecting that there was a set of brothers named Alec and Drew previously on the show. I'm not sure. And then we have Letitia and we have Shrey. I'm gonna say that you wrote A.
I actually wrote B. Choo choo, I'm all aboard the Drew train. I have no idea who Letitia is. I think Shrey is supposed to be Sheree, because Sheree. Shrey?
Shrey.
Shrey? I don't know. That's all I could think of. I have no idea who that is, and absolutely no idea who Drew is.
I'm going to still stay on my own train that I think if they were referring to Shrek.
Like, I like that. Way more insulting. We'll go with that. Maybe it was Shrek when he's in human form. Oh, no, I feel like still insulting.
Okay. Natalie's like an onion.
She's got layers. Okay. All right. Your next question. This is all things that were misspelled.
Oh, great.
A, Angela should have bring a sweetar. B, shoes her true colors. C, when he got chalked up about being 300 plus pounds, I got chalked up too. Or D, gad they got rid of her. Okay. I.
Oh, I didn't know there was an I there at the last second. Chalked yeah. up when he got chalked up. I guess they
I got chalked up too.
Yeah, just I was writing on the board about how reclamped I felt. I got that chalked up. Let's see. So we got sweet her. That was A. What was B?
Shoes her true colors.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know what colors her shoes were. I guess if they were close to the Goliath colors, maybe that does show her true colors, that she was Goliath strong.
Yeah, truly the wrong color theory she's trying to put out into the world.
And could you read D again?
Gad, they got rid of her. I.
Maybe they were trying to like tag Josh Gad in it. Famous Survivor fan Josh Gad.
Yeah, sure. That's definitely what was going on.
At Josh Gad, they got rid of her. Spoiler alert. I'm going to say that B, shoes her true colors, is what you wrote.
I wrote A.
Oh.
And actually, it's funny because I wrote it as Angela should have bring a sweether. And then I meant to say Angela. Like, I genuinely, or, oh my God, Angelina. I like,
oh no.
Like,
oh no.
Tried.
I mean, we might have to play a game for next week. Not forget Natalia versus Angelina. We have to do Angelina versus Angela.
I know. I have no idea who Angela is, but she apparently is someone who should have brought a sweether. Okay. All right. So now we just have some potpourri questions. So these are some comments. Let's get going. A, Natalie took her jacket with her because she wants to sell it on eBay for big bucks. Maybe she didn't win Survivor, but she wins on eBay. Natalie is no dummy. B, OMG, this was my favorite moment in Survivor in a many, many seasons. Hashtag millennials suck.
Oh.
Or C, bro chachos. More like bro cha ha 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 nose. Sticking out tongue emoji, winking face emoji.
Oh, on the note of you not landing with jokes, that might be a top contender.
Or D, the only what I could have put up with Natalie at camp was if I was a witch doctor and could shrink her head, I'd be the greatest survivor in history.
Wow. Yeah, I would give a spot in the Survivor Hall of Fame to the voodoo doctor who could shrink people's heads of their opponents.
I like though that this correlation between if I was a witch doctor and could shrink her head, I'd be the greatest survivor in history. I'm sorry, what?
It's a big move, or a small move, I guess it is, in making someone small.
Yeah, this is like Beetlejuice.
I can just imagine, like, Natalie, talk to me about differences versus issues.
Well, Jeff, I think that, in the workplace, I bring a lot of negotiation sales tactics.
That also could be a Muppet voice if you're looking to repurpose that.
Natalie
else.
Has a great career as the newest Muppet, big body, small head.
Oh, boy. Well, it's because, you know, she's got to stick up her butt, right? Like a hand up her butt. So, you know, get it? Get
All
it.
Right,
you get
so let's
it,
see.
Though.
So we've got eBay. I'm not.
Yes.
Casuals could think that like Survivor people might be. I mean, we'll see how much Natalie's jacket goes up next time we do the Price is Rourke on the system. What was B again?
OMG, this was my favorite moment in Survivor in a many, many seasons.
Oh, yeah.
Hashtag
millennials
suck.
Great. Yeah. Love that. Digging the knife in. And then C. What was C again?
Bro chachos. Oh. More like bro cha ha ha nose.
Oh, Sam, really inclined. You know what? Might as well bookend it. I'm going to go with C.
Smart call. That was definitely me. And it's one of those things where it's like you write it and then I just laugh at myself because it's so stupid. classic. All right, Mike. So you could get, you could go 3 for 6 if you get this last
oh,
one
oh,
correct.
Good. That's a high bar for me, though. So I'm doing pretty well.
That's true. I would say so. All right. So we have a final potpourri question. First comment, A, sneaky. Did no one see the robot guy prairie dogging over the bushes watching him?
Oh, no.
Yeah. B, I guess that's why Angelina gave Natalie a hug. She was probably thinking about ripping the coat off her body and couldn't. see, when is the girl with the knee coming back? Or D, I think people forget that it's Survivor, not Jesus auditions. I don't know what Jesus auditions are, but this is like not Jesus Christ Superstar auditions. I think they mean like, you know, New Testament Jesus. Uh-oh. Like, you okay there?
I just got Kalish there. That broke me.
No breasts.
Oh, this is this podcast. This is Survivor, not Jesus auditions. Who is that even referring to?
I think the coat. That's my best guess. Like giving up the coat? Maybe? I don't know. I'm not entirely sure.
Oh, God. Okay. Oh, I thought, oh, my God. All right. Now I just completely forgot the other three because I was too focused on Jesus auditions.
All right. A was sneaky. Did no one see the robot guy prairie dogging over the bushes watching him?
This theory that Christian was looking at Dan while he was pooping in a bush.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe it's just because I'm speaking to like my fandom of the movie Rat Race, but that's the first thing I think of when it comes to prairie dog in it.
Okay, that's the first thing that I thought too. I thought of the movie Rat Race and the kid who was like, I'm prairie dogging over here. That was what I thought about, and I was like, oh God. But I'm pretty sure because, you know, Christian's like poking his head up, like I think that was actually supposed to be the reference, not any form of defecation, but I don't know. And then B was, I guess that's why Angela gave Natalie a hug. She's probably thinking about ripping the coat off her body. And then when is the girl with the knee coming back? And then the Jesus auditions. Those are your options.
Oh boy, I cannot. The good place mentally to like even think about these. What is the girl with the knee coming? Okay. I'm gonna go with B, that you wrote B.
I actually wrote C. Like, girl with the knee coming back. Because I was gonna write something about like the girl with the injured knee. And I was like, no, it's way better to just say knee, like no one else has knees.
Yep.
She's the only girl with the knee.
And not like the knees, one knee. She has one knee girl. Right next to a big head, a big body, small head. It's a new crop of Muppets. The mutant Muppets.
The girl with the knee and the big body, small head. Oh, that's the buddy comedy we all really need to see. And then we can have the episode about Jesus auditions. Oh my God. Okay, well, so congratulations, Mike. I guess you're 33% correct.
Listen, that's much better. I'm working my way up like the Rotten Tomatoes scale to like, I don't know, Mamma Mia 2 instead of other movies that are maligned. But we're all the winners because we learned about Jesus auditions.
Yeah, from Emoji Movie to Mamma Mia 2. Where do you think, how well do you think you're going to do on this list?
Working my way up there. Eventually, I'll get up to like Batman Forever.
Right. The true goal in life. Who doesn't want to be at Batman Forever?
I set my limits lowly on.
That's important. Actually, okay, so there was one other comment that I wanted to read that was, if we ever start our Beatnik Beatdown segment with our poetry, there was one Casuals Corner edition. Okay, I'm going to read it right now. You say you're cold, you'll just have to hack it, because I'd be cold too if I gave you my jacket.
I don't know
if that was intentional, but I loved it.
Very Dr. Seuss-like.
Yeah, this is this casual maybe actually was just read where the sidewalk ends and was inspired.
Well, actually, speaking of which, I do want to take us to our slam poetry corner. Actually, I think we're going to adopt the name that the great Jordan Kalish gave us. We're going to do the Semhoff here, referring to a great contestant Semhar, who did the beat poetry from the first from the time she went home in the Redemption Island of Survivor South Pacific. We got a poem this week. Thank you so much to Mummy Gaga for sending it our way. The fun wrinkle in this poem, Liana, is that similar to your predictions, Mummy Gaga used a predictive text generator based on John's Hennigan's bio to write a Slam Town Slam poem.
Oh no, based on my success in the predictions this season, I don't know how this is gonna go, but I'm definitely up for it.
All right, here we go. Cochran, room for challenges. I'm wrestling winnings, the Spanish triple. John, plenty wrestling other. I, Mike, I, mayor have wrestlers, if loyal locker. I be within family, Holloway non-Mexican pro, Shireen over form strategically.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good. That was better. That was better than my predictions for sure. I always love it when Cochran's in there because so many people talked about Cochran. Like I'm pretty sure when I was doing Pats, it was also like I was like, why is Cochran here so much? So to have that featured here, truly amazing.
And there are some like good syntax in there. Like I'm wrestling winnings. That's literally what he does. And John plenty wrestling other. He's trying to say like I am more than just a wrestler. I have this degree in geology. I think he said he be within family. He's in a family now with the Tiva tribe. And Holloway is a non-Mexican pro. He's a professional survivor player who is not Mexican.
I'm excited for the future archaeologists or perhaps aliens to discover this poem to try to interpret it. I'd love to hear what they have to say.
And also Shireen overformed strategically. And Shireen was certainly in a form from the Reno et al's, if the video is to be believed.
Heard that.
So thank you so much to Mommy Gaga for this week's submission for the Semhoff and also for the accidental rhyming person from Casual's Corner.
truly amazing. I'd have to give the win to Mommy Gaga, but that's just my personal opinion. All right. So I, speaking actually still of Casual's Corner, there was an exchange on Casual's Corner that I absolutely have to talk about. And it sort of ties into what I'm going to pull for my question of the week. So there was somebody on the Casuals Facebook page who's very confused about vegetarians and eggs. So we'll call this person Nichol. And Nichol asked the initial question, vegetarians eat eggs? To which people responded, yes, vegans don't eat eggs. Vegetarians eat eggs. To which Michael
Michael, you threw away his identity.
I doxed him. Okay. Sorry. Schmeichel said,
Shrey said,
but eggs came from meat. It was produced in an animal that is eaten by carnivores. But eggs are produced from an animal that grows into meat. An egg produces meat. And so I just don't know if maybe we can help Schneichel answer this question. An egg produces meat, I think, has to be one of my favorite lines I've ever written. read on a Casuals page. And then also this person goes on to then say, I'm not trying to trigger anyone. I've just never met a vegetarian that doesn't still eat a form of meat. They still usually eat fish or chicken. It's like Michael Phelps saying he can't swim.
Wow. What a comparison. Because humans do one we're born to do one thing on this earth, and that's to eat.
So I guess I'm not quite sure. So I guess my question is twofold. One, do vegetarians eat eggs? And does it count because an egg produces meat? And then what is he trying to say when it's like Michael Phelps saying he can't swim?
Yeah. So I do think vegetarians do eat eggs. It's like saying they eat cheese. You know, would John Schmeichel Jingleheimer Schmidt argue that that cheese should not be eaten by vegetarians because it comes from an animal that produces meat? Or is it just because eggs can produce chickens that are meat? Is that what he's saying?
Right. Like cheese doesn't make cows or goats or whatever, but an egg can produce a chicken, but you know, but then, okay, so then somebody commented, well, the eggs that we eat are unfertilized, so they don't turn into meat. And then Schneichel responded, so the chickens are sterile, which I just then love this concept of sterile chickens.
Yeah, we make sure we spay our chickens before we make sure there's no funny business. We want to make sure our vegetarians can eat eggs without any sort of moral quandary.
Right. So then somebody tried to clarify, well, no, like roosters would need to fertilize the chickens. And then Schneichel was still like, but it still comes from meat. So if eggs are produced, like, I think there's a sort of conflating two different ideas. Like, the fact that it comes from a chicken versus the fact that it could potentially become a chicken might be two different moral quandaries. I'm not quite sure.
Is Schneichel actually Jeffra from Survivor Kagayan?
I mean, possibly. Who knows? The picture is a car, so, you know, who knows?
Well, that makes sense. Cars don't understand our human ways.
This is what's, Lightning McQueen?
It's Lightning McQueen's burner account.
Yeah. Asking questions about vegetarians to one day take over. I'm sure that's what it is.
Hi, regular human male here. Just want to ask a typical question of all people. Are eggs eaten by vegetarians?
Again, just a regular person, human being over here.
When you put the egg in your hood to digest them, are you allowed to do that as a vegetarian?
I'm not gonna lie though, I loved all of the other casuals really trying to get through to this person / car about like what this means and like what vegans and vegetarians don't eat. It was clearly not getting through, but well,
they had to couch the opinion through Michael Phelps. That's the only way to get to this person / car.
It's like Michael Phelps saying he can't swim.
I don't know. Michael Phelps has been involved in all of these like therapy commercials, and I'm all for it. But it also just invokes like, does he think like Michael Phelps, like, is he doing himself a disservice now? Has he become a vegetarian by no longer swimming and instead focusing on educating people about self-help?
I have no idea. It's like Michael Phelps saying he can't eat a Subway sandwich. Like, I don't know.
Well, there better not be any meat in that or eggs.
Or I don't know, but an egg produces meat. That's really, I think, the key takeaway here.
Well, let's move on to our final segment of each and every week here on the B&B, the question of the week. We're going back to Slamtown and all of its corporations therein with this question of the week. What would be your position in Slamtown? We got a lot of great answers. We'll go through it and Liana and I will give each of our responses. Let's start with last week's guest, Kirk Clark. As the official RHAP tabulator, I think my obvious role in Slamtown would be census taker, if at The Real Morrison would let me campaign. Then I could verify the answer to @CHubicki's question re-Slamtown's population, so he could get to the bottom of the gerrymandering controversy.
Do you have to vote for census taker? I feel like that would be an appointed position.
It would be census minister.
The census minister, all the other ministers, all just hanging out together. I like it.
So the Melissa bot says, I will be a photonics manufacturing supervisor, electronics expert, bartender, caretaker to nuns, and between jobs, I also fill in at Red Lobster as a server in Slamtown. So Melissa bot brings up a good point that I think Debbie Wanner can fill a lot of different. Debbie Wanner can really be like the one size fits all of Slamtown. One size slams all.
Well, I was going to say the Melissa bot has some competition for those positions. I think there's someone else equally qualified to do all of those things.
All right, Melissa bot, Debbie, we're going to put you on one end of this. Whoever walks across the balance beam first gets the jobs.
Right. Just like Shrey was able to do in that one episode.
Yes, exactly. Shrey was also able to convince Donkey to cross that balance beam bridge as well.
Mm-hmm.
Parker Schimler says, I would like to put my bid in for Secretary of Education in Slamtown. For the Beatniks, I will work with Mr. Schneebly to open the School of Rock and open the School of Hard Knockdowns for the Beatdowns.
Oh, that's smart. I mean, that's just a solid platform to run on. I'd vote for this guy.
Also, I feel like School of Hard Knockdowns is like, I don't know, like a different universe version of GLOW, the Netflix show.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So when GLOW has a spinoff, they're like, okay, we explored all these women. Now let's go to the brochachos of Slamtown.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's what the fedora wearers really want. Moving on to Jonathan Troyer, I'd like to be the bartender of Slamtown. My logic is that Slamtonians drink heavily to momentarily forget their slamming. Thus, the lucky break, my idea for the name of Slamtown's bar, should be bringing in plenty of money.
My other thought that I had about the Slamtonians, not to think too much about what my answer is going to be, but I feel like there are a lot of medical issues you could be dealing with, especially in terms of concussions and head injuries. So I don't know if mixing alcohol with that is the best option, but you know what, you do you, Jonathan.
Well, I also don't know, like, who do you get to be a bouncer in Slamtown? Because like you need to get the biggest person of them all, unless you get like big body small head to just really freak him out.
Yeah, big body. It's you have to operate through different tactics, you know. Yeah. So obviously physically you can't do that. So I think mental is sort of the way to go at it. For example, if Rob were in Slamtown, the bouncer would be a clown.
Yes, you go for you really get their biggest fear. You have to get what you get a boggart from Harry Potter wardrobe positioned at the lucky break, and so it comes out to be whatever they're most afraid of.
Genius.
The great DJ.
A genius.
Ooh, there we go. We've ascended now. The great DJ LaBelle Klein says, in Slamtown, where people have been slammed and are down on their luck, I think Phil T and I could find success running our own premier high-end all-media entertainment conglomerate a la Entertainment 720 from Parks and Rec.
Oh, man. And then when they go under, they'll throw the greatest party. So I would be okay with this. Hopefully they can manage their money a little better. But if they're going to hire, they could hire, oh my gosh. So instead of Detlef Schrempf, then you're going to have, who would they get? Scott Pollard?
Yes, exactly. I was thinking like the basketball player just running hoops. Him and Cliff Robinson.
Yeah, exactly. They would be on the payroll.
Well, I'm happy that the enemies are able to come together to work at Entertainment 720. Just a quick note, don't print your own money. It will not work out for you.
Yeah, but then, you know, when you hit the big red button, it's going to be a party.
Next up, Steve Bond says, I would like to formally apply to be the CEO/airport director of the Slamtown International Airport, the three-letter code of which is SIA. The official airline is Slam Airways, and its slogan is "No soft landings in Slamtown."
Yeah, I'm just imagining, you know, planes coming down, boom, gotta slam them as soon as they get to Slamtown. That's what it means if you're gonna slam somebody in Slamtown, because that's how they get there.
Well, I could also imagine like the planes don't have wheels. They build like the runways on like craggly rocks.
Just to like make it more intimidating. No soft landings. Maybe they make people like jump out a parachute, like with parachutes, and jump down, and then they like have to hit the ground. No soft landings and slam down.
Ooh, I like how this is starting similarly to like The Challenge or The Amazing Race.
Yeah. It all comes together.
Elizabeth says, I'm thinking there would be people who have not been slammed but want to visit Slamtown. I would like to be a tour guide for Slamtown. Take people to the mayor's office, the Hall of Names, where each John Morrison nickname is represented in bust form, etc.
I see, my only problem with this is I still don't know if you can just visit Slamtown. Like, can you get a tourist visa to go to Slamtown? And then are you not slammed? I mean, this isn't going to fit with our landing from the Slam Airways, but I don't know. There's some details we're going to have to work out.
Jessica Lees says, my ideal Slamtown career, running an anonymous gossip blog about the secret scandals of the Slamtown city government called, of course, the Slam Book.
Oh, I mean, this is a done deal. And given all of the issues in Slamtown with shadow governments and corruption, I mean, this is just something that has to exist.
Oh.
But I mean, they're going to get taken down. Oh my God. Oh my God. The mafia is going to go and be like, be a shame if anything happened to your print media stand. And of course, like, Natalie's the one who's there.
She has a stranglehold on the authentic newspaper. Yeah. So she'll be able to just buy him out.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I know something about the downfall of print media, kids.
Drew says, if I were in Slamtown, I would want to be the fire chief. They don't call him Johnny Blaze for nothing. Fire emoji, side eye emoji.
I think the addition of the emojis really sells it.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Mike White especially would love the inclusion of emojis, because I'm assuming he just makes residuals based on it.
Oh my God. Yeah. I gotta start tweeting at Mike White and just include the like crappy hand emoji with the band-aid or whatever.
This was all your fault.
Yeah. How dare you?
Romaine says, it's obvious that Slamtown needs better border security because people are confused about who belongs there. The job I want in Slamtown is border agent. I will make sure people coming in belong in Slamtown. If you were only put in a headlock, you don't belong in Slamtown. Clotheslined, that's two towns east, so entry denied.
I like the idea that based on what physical punishment you might endure, you belong in a different town.
Yeah, we didn't even realize like the sister cities of Slamtown, Clothesline-burg, Headlockville.
Where do you go for like bullying or emotional abuse, like those types of things? Those are much more sad. That's
you go
where
to Therapyville, where Michael Phelps is the mayor.
With his Subway sandwiches, but no eggs. No eggs.
No eggs. Make sure, because he needs to keep swimming. Finally, Brad says, probably controlling transportation. Since people come unwillingly, I bet they want to get out of town, so controlling how that happens is probably lucrative. I like the series of, like, one-way bus systems that run into Slamtown, but not out of it.
Okay, so I know that we talked about the bumper cars being a way to be transported around Slamtown, but I'm still just picturing sort of like Fred Flintstone-esque modes of transportation because they're just such brutes. They just push the cars with their feet. So that's still what I'm picturing. So I don't know how you could be the Secretary of Transportation or whatever to regulate that, but it could be doable.
Then you put their feet in blocks of cement, so now they can't go anywhere after they make their one-way trip.
Consult Natalie on that one.
Yes, exactly. She knows her way or two around that. All right, Liana, you alluded to it before, but what would your position be in Slamtown?
Well, so I was thinking, you know, I really want to utilize my natural talents, being something with science. So I don't know if a science minister perhaps is the correct position for me, or maybe potentially like surgeon general could be where I fit in. Although, like I said, I do feel I'd be dealing with a lot of concussions.
Yeah, I feel
or,
like your
you know,
please
sort of
be
like,
falling on deaf ears, Liana. Like, please stop like slamming
literal,
people.
Like literal deaf ears because everybody has CTE from all of the slamming that's going on. I mean, it's like a lot of bodily injuries that could be dealing with, like, instead of, you know, obesity, whatever health crises the U.S. is dealing with, this is all just like torn MCLs, broken bones and head injuries.
So I am going to go with a little bit more on like the Phil T. DJ LaBelle Klein end of the entertainment spectrum. I would be coming out with my hit show Slam, which is a takeoff on Stomp, where instead of moving around trash can lids and all that stuff, we're going to be slamming people into various walls to make percussive noises.
Oh, I like that. I like this idea. I think it'll be a big hit for a very short period of time. And then it will fade into obscurity, much like the t-shirts with the inside jokes you'll get.
Yeah, they'll all fade away. Well, surprisingly enough, yeah, people, after a certain amount of time, won't necessarily want to volunteer their efforts to get slammed around for a two-hour show.
Right. The poor, well, you know, I don't know, maybe those are the criminals of Slamtown. They're the ones that have to participate in the stomped slam version.
Yes, the weirdest form of corporal punishment there is. So moving on to our question of the week for next week. Natalie, in the two times we saw her go to tribal council, she did some fantastic voting confessionals that really pointed towards the stylistic choices that her tribe members were making, whether it was Jeremy's skin looking beautiful or Lisa needing to take her lime green coat back to Boston, but she likes her purple hair. So in honor of the late, great Natalie, what I want you all to do out there is create a Natalie-esque voting confessional that discusses a previous contestant's style choices. Obviously, over the years, a lot of interesting fashion choices from Survivor contestants. Step into Natalie's shows, if you will, and make your own judgment of someone's fashion choices couched in a voting confessional. I think Jenny Autumn wrote this a couple days ago of like Jeff Probst's cargo was out about 15 years ago, which probably much to Davey's chagrin. So try to write in that. We'll read it off next week. As we'll be joined by another expecting father, Nick Iodanza, fresh from finishing up his deep dives with Australian Survivor, is going to be moving back west of the international dateline to talk about some American version.
Oh my gosh, I'm really looking forward to it, mainly because I'm excited to hear you two bond about being new fathers or to-be fathers. I expect the dad jokes to floweth.
To-be fathers, are you referring to the girl with the knee?
Yes, exactly. The girl, the baby with the knee. When are we going to see the baby with the knee?
Well, Liana, how can people follow you on social media if they want to talk with you further about any casual comments or how vegetarians should or should not be able to eat eggs?
Yeah, if anybody wants to talk about an egg turns into meat or whatever, you can follow me on social media. I'm at Liana Boras, LianaBoraas.
And you can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. This past week, I came out with a couple of things. I hopped back onto the Dom and Colin podcast to talk about a show that you and I both love, Liana, BoJack Horseman for season 5. Have you finished it yet? BoJack Horseman, that is.
Yes. Oh my gosh. The new season was so good. I'm excited to hear you talk about the monologue episode.
Yeah, we pretty much monologue about the monologue episode. Very apt. So be sure to check that out. I also got together with Mario Lanza to do our first SNL month in review for SNL After Party. We talked about the first 3 episodes of this season and our thoughts so far, which is a lot of fun. wrote an article for The Hollywood Reporter about The Haunting of Hill House, and while season two hasn't been announced yet, what the possible prospects can be for it. That was really exciting, and of course there'll be some other stuff on the horizon. I just wanted to thank you all again for the well wishes over the course of the past day. It really has warmed my heart, and you know, it's a crazy exciting time, and it just invigorated me more. I feel like Jeff Probst after the Davids beat that won that Goliath challenge, just doing laps around my apartment in ecstasy. So thank you all so much for listening. Liana, great work as per usual. Again, apologies about no guest being this week, but again, last minute scheduling difficulties made Liana and I have to adjust. In Survivor, you have to naturally adapt and adjust, and hopefully we were able to do so with the silliness we provided over the past hour and a half. But we'll be back next week with a guest, Nick Iadanza, to talk through episode 6 of Survivor, David versus Goliath, as the Drew train keeps chugging along here with season 37. Thank you all so much for listening. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre for editing this behind the scenes. Will from America for our theme song. Paul Osselson for his head writing. GreenChef.us/Survivor if you want $50 off your first box for Green Chef. Otherwise, we will check you out at your next stay.
Drew Train, choo-choo!
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.